Welcome to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, where you'll hear advice from experienced safety leaders on how to protect your people and business. I'm Peter Steinfeld. Today's episode is all about tornadoes, how to prepare, respond, and keep people and businesses safe during these unpredictable events. My guest today has had a long career in the National Weather Service, but also spent time as a storm chaser. In this episode, she shares current conditions and valuable advice for tornado season, as well as storm stories from the ground you won't want to miss. Please enjoy my conversation with Warning Coordination Meteorologist Jennifer Dunn. Hey, Jennifer, thanks so much for being here today.
Hey, Peter, it's great to be on with you today. I'm looking forward to talking a little bit about severe weather and tornado risks and how people can be prepared.
Absolutely. I'm super excited to talk about tornadoes. They are absolutely fascinating. But my question is, what fascinates you about tornadoes? How did you get into storm chasing and meteorology in general?
Oh, man, that goes back quite a bit. I figured it out in about eighth grade. I think it was in math class. I was supposed to be paying attention, obviously, and instead I was fascinated looking at a thunderstorm out the window. And that's just kind of when it hit me that I've been fascinated with thunderstorms for a while and I wanted to study them. So carried that on through high school, up into college, where I have my degree in meteorology from Texas A&M. And during my time at college is where I really kind of got started in on the storm chasing part of it. And then as I moved up into the National Weather Service, I continued to do some storm chasing on the side as well. And that's where I saw my first tornado. I've actually only seen one in person, but it's still fascinating to see it actually evolving and occurring in nature. And you talk about the amount of sheer strength that they have and the damage that they can do. And I know a lot of people wouldn't refer to that as fascinating, but how quickly these phenomena can spin up, completely destroy some areas, unfortunately, hopefully everybody's safe, and then kind of be gone within a matter of minutes. And on all the challenges that comes with forecasting that, they can, you know, spin up or evolve really rapidly. So it's always something you got to be paying attention for on radar in the right environment, and making sure that people are hopefully getting as much advance notice as they can about those possibilities.
Yeah, weather certainly can be fast moving, but nothing near like a tornado. So it's got to be just a completely different thing. If you think about the science of what you do as a meteorologist day in and day out, you've got all this other stuff that is kind of lumbering and slow moving. And then you got tornadoes, like dramatically different.
Yes, tornadoes are probably the phenomenon that occurs on the shortest amount of time span or time frame there. You can be in an environment where it doesn't look like they're really going to support tornadoes, or maybe just one or two. And then suddenly an ingredient changes or something changes then. And all of a sudden you're in a tornadic type situation, or you see it developing on radar. So you're working quickly. And we can turn tornado warnings out in about 30 seconds if we have to. But we're working quickly to get that information out and let people know how that is changing. So it's certainly one of the ones that happens on that shortest time scale that we always have to make sure we're aware of, even if we're looking at it as a day that might not be completely supportive of tornado development.
Well, with that in mind, can you give us a bit of an overview of the 2023 tornado season? Like, what was significant about it, and what are some of the key takeaways for organizations from last year?
Yeah, there actually was an uptick in tornadic activity in 2023 versus 2022, but we have to be careful when we draw conclusions like that, when you try to relate one year to the next year or even looking ahead. But let me go back to 2023 real fast. I have some statistics from there. There were over 1,250 preliminary confirmed tornadoes so far. I think we're still probably calculating near the end of last year. But this ended up being the 12th most on record, and those numbers were actually over our 10-year average. So it was actually a fairly active year across the contiguous U.S. for tornadic activity. Of that over, 1,250 that we talked about, only 44% were strong tornadoes, which means EF2 or greater. The strongest tornado of 2023 was the Rolling Fork, Mississippi tornado, and it was an EF4. So not every year do we have big destructive EF5 tornadoes, but an EF4 with 195 mile per hour winds is obviously going to cause a very bad day for a lot of people. And unfortunately, we had some people that lost their lives in that tornado. I don't remember the exact numbers, but we always have to be on guard for tornadic activity. And that doesn't mean just in the typical spring months. That means all during the year as well. To kind of highlight a little bit of that, the day with the highest number of tornadoes in 2023 was actually the end of March, so which is getting close to peak severe weather season. But the second day of the year with the highest number of tornadic activities was January 12th. And then I believe, if I remember right, the fourth was actually in December. So if you think of peak severe weather and tornado season as April, May, or maybe mid-March to early June in some areas, we're starting to see more tornadic activity maybe outside of that. And while it's not necessarily uncommon, I think we're just seeing that information highlighted a lot more to make sure that people are prepared at all times of the year.
Yeah, that was my question, actually, is are these things happening more, or are we just, as our instruments catching them more, we're able to report them more?
I think there's a lot more attention on them is what's happening, especially ever since the movie Twister. There's been a lot more interest in storm chasing. And so there's a lot more eyes on these storms.
Well, as you think about 2023 and then you look forward into 2024, should we expect similar conditions for this year's tornado season?
It's really hard to say kind of what we can expect. There are climatological conclusions or starting points, I should say, that we can draw based on whether we're in an El Nino or a La Nina phase. And we're coming out of El Nino into a neutral. So we could maybe think that maybe our tornadic activity won't be as great as 2023 because we'll be in neutral. But I still don't want us to kind of lose our guard on being prepared for tornadic or thinking it's not going to be as active or that we're safe from it. So we still need to be prepared for potential for tornadic activity in our area. As just looking at the ENSO pattern that we're in there, there's the starting point potential that it could be a little bit less or somewhat less than 2023.
Well, what risk factors are associated with tornadoes that organizations should be aware of?
One of the biggest things about tornadoes, at least from a business or even a residential standpoint, is that everything can be significantly changed or destroyed in a few seconds by a tornado, and that the recovery time from that oftentimes can be longer than anticipated. And to give you an example, we had a tornado that hit a large warehouse type store, a national chain here in the DFW area, back in the fall of 2022. And that store is just finally going to be reopening later this year. So that's
wow.
2-year recovery where they didn't have any business in there. And the building was still standing. I know the roof was damaged, but maybe there was something with the structural integrity that has impacted them from being basically out of commission in that area for what will be close to 2 years by the time that they reopen. So on the risk side, of course, you risk, or there's the risk of damage to facilities, debris being strewn about, cleanup, debris causing more damage also. You have your damaged facilities. You may have damaged homes. If you think about your employees' homes and how will they need to spend their time and help with any type of recovery and cleanup and efforts there with them and their families. Down power lines, loss of communications at times, not being able to communicate across with your team. Travel problems as well, maybe not even being able to fully evacuate out of an area, being blocked by down debris until it's cleaned up. Those are some of the things too. So on an exterior type damage side, you could have landscaping and parking lot damage that maybe has to be accounted for. On your interior damage, you think about structural integrity, but if your walls, windows, or roofs are also impacted, that is going to allow rain to get in for any other storms or any rain that's ongoing. So that might result in additional water damage within facilities and residential also. You could have equipment damage, whether it's on the outside of the facility, but also on the inside as well. If you have multiple facilities, it's most likely that just one facility is going to be impacted. So is there a way that you can kind of continue operations or move those operations to a different facility as part of the recovery? And then just coming back around quickly to the risk is if your employees live nearby or if it is a longer track, they may need time and the ability to assess and take care of their own families and their own homes. And that may take them out of the workforce for a little while. And thinking about what does that look like for you and your business or your organization, anything like that. Can they work remotely? If they don't have communications at their homes, they might not even be able to work remotely. And then the time, like I said, that they needed just to do what they need to recover or kind of clean up their own personal property there with their families, friends, neighbors, whichever's kind of needed from that.
Well, clearly some amount of preparation is important. So what are some of the key components that businesses should include in their tornado emergency plans to help mitigate some of these things?
You want to make sure that you have a trusted source of weather information. And redundancy is key too. So having multiple ways to get weather information. And then how do you share that information? And not only on site, but do you have a responsibility for remote or traveling workers as well? And what does that look like? So when you come down to your severe weather plan itself, of course, at what point do you activate your severe weather plan? Hopefully, it's about time that maybe a warning is issued for the area. But what if the storm is already pretty close? Have you been kind of monitoring things as storms develop and move into the area? Are you able to give maybe some more advance notice? And then what does sharing that information look like across your facilities there? Is it an alerting system? Is it speakers, email? You might need different versions of that, especially if you're accounting for travel or remote employees too, or employees who might not be in the facility. So when it's time to enact the plan, you need to know your sheltering locations. And you pretty much, when you alert people, you need to tell them to take action or to kind of tell them what to do. How are your employees going to get to those sheltering locations? Do they know where they are? And what is the time it takes to get everybody to the sheltering location? Some other things that you might want to think about is, do you need to secure any type of equipment, depending on either the stability or the need for them? But having that plan and practicing it so that those employees can almost do it from memory to do that and get into shelter, it will save time and hopefully lives in the ability, or in the unfortunate case that there is some type of direct hit. And then once we go past the storm at this point now, what does your recovery plan look like? What if it's minor damage? What do you need to do if it's moderate damage? Or what do you need to do if it's major or destroyed? And what does your business continuity plan look like at that point in the recovery also? One important thing to think about is it's important to have your important documents available or secured offsite, or have a copy of them offsite so that you have access to those. So maybe you can get your business, your operations back up and running in some other type of way by having access to those documents there too. And then the biggest thing is planning, reviewing, and then exercising, doing drills and practicing that. You know, when we talk about schools, they usually run either every semester or every couple of months, they run their tornado drills, active shooter drills. It should be the same for businesses so that it's almost a muscle memory of exactly what to do whenever they are alerted that they need to take some type of protective action.
Yeah, that muscle memory is so key.
It is, yes. Muscle memory can really help shed seconds or maybe even more off of that. Hopefully help protect life and property.
Now, one of the things that we often see when emergencies happen is people don't want to believe it's happening. They're like, it's not going to happen to me. It's never happened to me before. That happens to other people. So do you have any communication advice to help businesses share timely information that's accurate, that their people will believe and kind of make them want to take action when something like this happens?
Social science research tells us that people go through 7 steps typically before they take action. So how can we get people to cut those steps out? And as you mentioned, one of the important steps is actually verifying that it's happening. And so as far as businesses and organizations, having your trusted weather source and having those backups so that you have multiple ways to get watch and warning information is critical. A trusted weather source could be turning on the television or the radio. Also consider the free alerts that your counties or your cities that you're in offer also. Another source out there is the wireless emergency alerts. So for tornadic warnings and for higher end severe thunderstorm warnings and flash floodings, your employees' mobile devices will automatically alert for when they're placed within one of those types of boxes, as long as they have that turned on. And that's through FEMA. FEMA has that set up with the FCC. They just utilize the National Weather Service's alerts. But some of your employees' phones or mobile devices are going to be going off, maybe even before you have had the chance to share the information too. So having your redundancy of how you share that information is important. And then how you distribute it, what that template looks like. Do you have templates for different types of weather? So coming back to one thing that I referenced earlier, part of that social science research too, is that people also need to be told what to do, but that message has to be short. You don't want your employees spending time trying to read a message to follow instructions before they take shelter. So it might be something as simple as a warning has been issued for our facilities, activate severe weather protocol and take shelter, which tells employees exactly what to do instead of just saying a warning has been issued and leaving them to be like, well, what does this mean? Do they want me to take shelter or not? So in that alerting, consider having those instructions for them, but you got to keep it short so they don't spend too much time reading with that. Another thing you might want to consider is, do you need people to acknowledge that they've received the message? In a lot of cases, it might be no. You'll know that they got it if they're taking shelter. But if you need something built in for maybe remote or traveling, that needs to be incorporated into that plan too.
And I think another thing that goes back to what you said earlier is the preparation ahead of time. It's incumbent upon the organization to tell people, hey, when we give you this information, we're taking it seriously and we want you to take it seriously as well. It's okay to stop working because your well-being, your life is way more important than your productivity.
Absolutely. And that's a great way to keep good morale and ensure that your employees know that they are being taken care of when hazardous weather threatens in their area or the region also.
Well, what have you learned about communicating through a storm from your time as a storm chaser?
So through storm chasing and through my current job right now, I've also learned or seen the value of the importance of reporting storm information to the National Weather Service, because that directly helps the National Weather Service meteorologists who are issuing the warnings in particular with their warning decision of exactly what to do. And that's the role that storm chasers and storm spotters play kind of in our larger scale group, is being our eyes and ears out there. So as a storm chaser too, if we had something to report, whether it's hail size, maybe strong winds or some wind damage we come across, reporting that to the National Weather Service so that they can incorporate that, make a decision, and then continue to alert people downstream of what's coming at them is critical. And that real quick kind of steps back to something you said earlier, was people react or take action when they know it's been verified versus it just being, quote, radar indicated or thought about. So having that confirmation from storm chasers helps in that larger scale communication process too. On the current job that I do right now, I'm usually one of the first out there to do damage surveys or damage assessments after, to determine tornado rating, wind speeds, track length, and path. So I get to interact with people that were impacted usually in the day or two right after a tornadic or a damaging wind event, if that's what we determine it to be. And oftentimes I'm coming up to them on one of the worst days of their life. So I usually try to keep my interactions with them short because they've got a lot going on. But what I do hear from them is about a lot of times is how they got the warning and the actions that they took or the lives that were saved. And so knowing that the National Weather Service meteorologists, chasers, spotters, public service, everybody was talking together, relaying reports back and forth through during the storms, looking for that confirmation so that we can tell people this has been confirmed, it's happening, all kind of comes together when you hear about people who got the warning, took shelter, and yes, they have a big cleanup to do and they may have lost a lot of their personal belongings, but they and their family and their pets or whoever else are safe because they took those appropriate actions.
Yeah, that's ultimately what you want. One thing you said made me think, do you have to be a designated or a self-identified storm chaser, or could anybody report information about storms and tornadic activity to the National Weather Service?
We take storm information however we can get it. So no, you don't have to be a designated storm chaser. We and the National Weather Service, we also host severe weather education programs that are called SkyWarn, if you've heard that term before. And we call them trained spotters. So a storm chaser may follow storms through different counties and different states, kind of as a hobby at times. Storm spotters tend to kind of report from where they are in the local area. But we also have information on our webpages just for the general public on how to reach our office if they need to report hail, damaging wind, tornadic activity, flooding, snow, ice as we get into winter weather. But we want that real-time critical information to be able to say it's confirmed or here's what we know is happening.
Well, to your point earlier, so many things contribute to making a tornado happen, and it's really hard to figure out what that exact recipe is. So you got to have eyes and ears everywhere reporting it in.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of the Weather Service meteorologists are in the office when it's happening. So we can't be out there in the field, and we rely on those who safely do it, please. We want them to be safe and consider their safety first. But those who can provide us those real-time reports, it really is invaluable. I make the joke, we have two windows in our office and they both look north, so I can't see everything that's out there anyway. And we work closely with them to hopefully provide some training and education so that they can keep themselves safe too.
Well, as we start to wrap up here, what's been the most rewarding experience for you as a warning coordination meteorologist?
Warning coordination meteorologist was my goal. When I kind of started early in the Weather Service, I figured that out. I like interacting with people. And I think one of the most rewarding things are, or maybe two quick things. One is I enjoy working with our partners in public safety, a lot of times in emergency management. That includes our broadcast meteorology partners also. I like working with them to ensure that they're getting the weather information they need to help them make critical decisions for their cities, their counties, their jurisdictions, their hospitals, their businesses that they may work with, that they have responsibility for during it. So seeing the action that they can take because of the information that me or other members of our office are providing has really been kind of rewarding, knowing that we're hopefully meeting that mission of saving lives and properties. And then I think one of the other things that I enjoy is it just blows me away when I go to regional meetings, partner meetings, meetings with emergency management, Skywarn sessions, and I just hear from people about how great they think our office, and I'll speak for our office, I'm sure this happens at other weather service offices, but they talk about just what a great job we do. And sometimes we think we're just kind of sitting in the four walls, but people are actually getting the information that they need to make life-saving decisions. And to hear that and that we're doing it in a manner that they need it has always been really humbling and rewarding in this position also.
Yeah, such meaningful work.
Thank you.
Well, final question. Are you excited about the new Twister movie coming out?
I am. They were looking for extras when they were filming in Oklahoma, and I didn't go up. I almost kind of wish I would have, but of course, the first Twister had a big impact on storm chasing. That came out when I was in college. I'll date myself a little bit there, but I am kind of looking forward to the second one, at least because I saw Dorothy, you know, the contraption, the instrument contraption seems to be making a return. I'd like
yes.
to see her again.
Fantastic. Well, I'm excited myself, so can't wait for it to come out. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the show. I learned a lot, and we really appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you so much. This time has flown by, and we appreciate you all helping us spread this type of information and knowledge, because we're really just trying to reach as many people as we can to make sure that they're prepared, ready, and know what to do during and after any type of tornadic or severe weather activity, especially as we start to approach peak severe weather season here.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. And to learn more about Jennifer and her work with the National Weather Service, click the links in the show notes. For video highlights from today's episode, just search for Alert Media on YouTube. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Stay safe out there.
Thank you for listening to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, the industry's most intuitive emergency communication and threat intelligence solution. To learn more about how to protect your people and business during critical events, visit alertmedia.com. Until next time.